Good afternoon. Please take your seats. The chair now calls this ALA Council Executive Board Membership Information Session to order. This meeting is held in accordance with Policy 5.5.2, which calls for at least one session of the ALA Council to be held with the Executive Board prior to the regular meetings of the Council. Any member of the association may participate in this information session. This is an information session only. No action may be taken here. It is ALA's policy to employ a professional parliamentarian for all of its business meetings at the conferences. It is now my pleasure to introduce Ellie Mina, ALA's parliamentarian. Also on the platform today are Barbara Stripling, ALA President-elect, Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to the Council, Joanne Kempf, Director of the Office of ALA Governance. I also would like to introduce Danielle Alderson, our projectionist, and Lois Ann Gregory Wood, our Council Secretariat. This meeting is being captioned for the hearing impaired. Our captionist for this meeting, this midwinter meeting, is Heather Therayak. If you wish to take advantage of this service, please be seated where you can see the screens. You have received the agenda, ALA Council Document Number 8. The agenda is also available at the Council Document pickup tables in this room. And now we'd like to take a moment and alert all of you to the fact that there is a memory book in which you were invited to contribute your memories about Russell Shank, and it will be available in this room and go around the room. And I'm just going to ask now, where is that memory book? Who has it? There it is, Barbara Jones, back there. So find your time to make your note if that's something you wish to do. Following up on a recommendation of the Task Force on Council Effectiveness, we've made some major changes in the council meeting agendas in order to allow council to focus more on strategic discussions and to make these reports more accessible to the membership. This means that reports and information briefings that were formerly presented as part of the council agenda will now be presented at this information session. This will allow an opportunity for members to hear and discuss these reports. I am now pleased to present my report, which is ALA Council Document Number 21. And you have this document, so I will just offer highlights from this very briefly, and then what I really want to do is invite any discussion about it. We're moving along very quickly and very effectively with the promise of libraries transforming communities, and this conference is proving to be a really good experience for members to understand this initiative and particularly to become acquainted with the methodology of the Harwood Institute for Public Innovation. We also are moving ahead with leadership development. We have scheduled the ALA Leadership Institute for the site near Chicago next August. And I'm really pleased to tell you that Library Leadership in the Digital Age, which will be held at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, March 21st to 23rd, already has 96 individuals signed up for that program. So we know that that program is a go. And the last thing I want to comment on is that I, along with my predecessors and my successor, continue to have the opportunity to visit and work with membership across the country and sometimes internationally. And these experiences are very educational, and they're really important times for engaging our members in a more direct way, but also having the opportunity to learn more about what the experience is, I'll say, our members and our potential members. Are there any questions about my report or anything I've said in my brief introduction? Hearing no questions, let's proceed to the next item on the agenda. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 29 and call upon President-elect Barbara Stripling to present her report. Barbara? And as Barbara is coming to the mic, for those of you who have not interacted with her yet today, she has a low voice capacity, is the way I'll put that. So bear with her as she offers her report.
Thank you. Excuse me. I'm very pleased to present my report, and I indeed will just highlight a couple of things. One of the initiatives that I was deeply involved with was the Washington, D.C. School Library Task Force. Some of you all know that due to budget cuts, many school librarians and school libraries in Washington, D.C. were closed. And so you will see in my report that our committee came up with five very strong recommendations which were submitted to the chancellor in Washington, D.C. We don't know what will happen with those, but one of the things that I am most proud of is that we did not back off of our recommendations simply because of budget constraints at all. These are high standards, and participating in this task force were superintendents, principals, teachers, school librarians, academic library educators, and members of the community. So it was a consensus document. I do want to comment on a couple of pieces that are priorities for ALA, and that's the promise of libraries and the e-books work. And I think you will hear a lot about those, but my only comment is that I have been very involved in all of those, and it's due to the leadership of Maureen and Molly and Keith that we are really all together on these efforts, and so we will see a seamless sustaining of these efforts over time. And finally, I wanted to mention my presidential initiative, which we are calling Libraries Change Lives. It will pull out all of the initiatives of Promise of Libraries and some of the strong things that we're doing on e-books, and focus really on try to pull that process into three areas of content. One is innovation, a second is community engagement, and third is literacy. And we are formulating plans right now. I welcome any contributions or volunteers to be involved. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Barbara? Thank you, Barbara. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 23 and ask our Executive Director, Keith Michael Fields, and not only is he Executive Director, of course, he's the Secretary of Council, to present his report.
Great. Thank you, Maureen, and good afternoon, everyone. I just wanted to touch on a couple of things to supplement some of the things that Maureen and Barbara have talked about. First of all, I know that you receive my reports on a regular basis, and I do hope that you continue to find them helpful and distribute them. I'm constantly amazed as I gather this information together on the wide variety of things that are underway and are happening throughout the association. And I know that it's interesting to see as you look at all of the divisions, all of the committees, all of the member groups that are working and all that's being accomplished. It's very difficult to get the report below 25 pages, no matter how hard I try. And I do think that one of the things this does constitute is probably the single most continuous record of what's actually been happening throughout the association over time. Maureen has talked about the Leadership Institute, and I just want to say that I am personally thrilled to be working with Madam President on this. If you look back at the first strategic plan that we developed going back 9 years ago, we talked about ALA taking a strong role in leadership. I think we had made some progress in the interim, but the implementation of this first, what we will believe will be an annual ALA Leadership Institute this August, is a major step forward. And I want to thank Maureen very much for your leadership and work on that. Thank you. Maureen's talked a little bit about the promise of libraries transforming communities, and I'm sure you're aware that there are a wide variety of fascinating programs at Council on this whole world of community engagement, all clustered around the partnership with the Harwood Institute. We are, as Maureen has suggested, undertaking on what we expect to be a multi-year project that will help to get tools, techniques, practices, and approaches to help libraries to turn outward and to better understand and more deeply understand their communities, not just to build community understanding, but to help libraries to innovate and more effectively relate to their communities. So we're I'm very pleased that Barbara and I and Maureen are working together on something that we think will have a long-lasting effect on the association and on libraries. I wanted to make a few notes on the digital content. I think neither Maureen nor Barbara mentioned the fact that you all saw the notice on Thursday, I believe, that Macmillan had announced that they, in fact, will be undertaking a pilot to sell e-books to libraries. So, I was at the first meeting where we met with the CEO of Macmillan. His office is at the top floor of the Flatiron Building in Manhattan. It's the only office in the Flatiron Building that has a balcony overlooking the square there. Molly was there. I believe he was wearing a hunting jacket with places in it for bullets. And I think that was symbolic of the relationship that we started out with. I would like to think that ALA, through our persistent efforts, helped to create some positive pressure to bring yet another one of the big six to bay and hopefully get us to the point where all e-books are available to libraries. I really want to thank the work of the Digital Content Working Group, Bob Wolven, who attended many of the meetings, Sari Feldman, the co chair, who also was there many times, who spoke with great credibility to all of the groups that we met with. We have many new friends and allies in the publishing world, and they're going to stand us in good stead as we actually start to look at the next generation of challenges and opportunities related to digital content. I want to talk just for a minute about the school library campaign. Barbara talked a little bit about some specific efforts related to the DC schools. As you know, I think it was now about a year ago, there was a council resolution on school libraries. And this was something I think that represented a feeling that something was happening due to the pressures of the economy and the lack of a strong statutory base at the national level and in many instances at the state level. And under these pressures, that school libraries were being negatively affected and that it really was important that we do something. This task force has been working and has just released at conference a plan for a campaign which is intended to try and build a national consensus that will help us to reverse what has been, I believe, an erosion in support for school libraries and bring the nation back to its senses. The three components of this campaign involve reaching out to parents, local communities, reaching out to school administrators and local officials, and reaching out to national policymakers. ESEA will eventually be reauthorized if Congress ever does anything. And at that time, we are going to have a historic opportunity. It may be the only time in a 20-year period when we have the possibility of strengthening the statutory foundation for school libraries. I think it's an opportunity that we can't miss. I want to thank all of the ALA members who participated in that enormous drive to get 28,000 signatures on the petition to the White House. I would have to say that it did not create cataclysmic change in the world, but it did demonstrate if 28,000 ALA members rose every time we needed to act quickly, we would be the powerful voice that we so often talk about. So stay tuned, because we will be working on the school library campaign, and you can expect to hear news, and we are really going to need your help. This is going to need to be an all-hands-on-deck experience, and we're going to be calling on you and asking you to call on others, because we have to make sure that the next generation of students have stronger school libraries. I think that concludes the things that I wanted to talk about.
Are there any questions for Keith? Go to the mic. Thank you, Elizabeth. Microphone number two.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. What is our current registration?
For the
midwinter.
Oh, Elizabeth, I was saving that for the end. But, okay, as I think I mentioned in my report, we came in with very strong advanced registration at about 5,519. On-site at this point has been 476 for a total registration of 5,995. And that's just a little bit shy of Dallas and a little bit shy of San Diego. When you add exhibitors, Seattle is almost parallel to Dallas and to San Diego at 9,622.
Microphone number three.
Stephanie Bronstein, counselor from Louisiana, and I want to thank you, all of you who are working on the school library issue, particularly because we are now facing some revisions of the documentation that requires school libraries and school librarians in the K through 12 system in Louisiana, and they are trying to essentially soften those requirements to the point where they have absolutely no teeth and leave it up to the individual administrators on each school campus whether they want to have a librarian, anything at all. And we really appreciate all the help that we can get, and if you want help from me or my fellow Louisianans, you can find us. We're ready.
Yes, great. We can. Thank you.
Thank you for alerting us to that as well, because there may be ways in which we can support your efforts.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Keith. At the 1987 midwinter meeting, the ALA Council voted that BARC, the ALA Budget Analysis and Review Committee, should report to Council at each ALA midwinter meeting and annual conference. I refer you to ALA Council document number 33 and call upon Clara Borer, Chair of BARC, to present the report. Clara?
Thank you, Maureen.
Thank you.
On behalf of the Budget and Analysis Review Committee, I'm pleased to provide Council and other members present this afternoon with an update on the FY13 budget, as well as on activities that BARC has engaged in since annual conference. In my presentation, I'll touch upon the FY13 budget adjustments and first quarter results, the dues adjustment proposal referred to BARC by the ALA Membership Committee, a request from United for Libraries to extend group membership rates, and the ALA Financial Learning Series. I'll begin with budget adjustments. As is usually the case, adjustments are made to ALA's budget between the annual conference and the fall meeting, and the FY13 budget is no exception. On the screen, you can see that the FY13 total ALA revenue adjustments that were recommended by BARC and approved by the Executive Board at the fall meeting shows an overall increase in the budgetary ceiling of $1.5 million. The most significant change in revenue was an increase in grant funds, which were awarded to ALA since annual conference. Grants continue to be an important component of ALA's revenue mix. And division revenue was adjusted down based on recommendations by their respective boards. Now, looking at budget adjustments from the expense side, I'd like to point out that the increase in grant revenue corresponds with an increase in expenses. There is also an increase in overhead received from grants, about $92,000, which is recovered in the general fund, resulting in a decrease in general fund revenue. BARC members spent a great deal of time at our fall meeting discussing the FY13 general fund budget. In recent years, the general fund has had to draw down from its net asset balance in order to end the year in a balanced budget. This is a reasonable use of net asset balance, particularly during challenging economic times, but the net asset balance is almost depleted. The FY13 budget was developed, as you may remember, with just under $300,000 in net revenue in the general fund in order to begin to replenish the net asset balance. BARC is carefully monitoring the budget, as is the ALA management team. And I'd like to share with you some expenses, the way the expenses are being managed. The general fund budget was initially developed with a 0.5% reduction across all departments and offices. In addition, the ALA management team is reducing expenses within the general fund by an additional $400,000. They've negotiated favorable health care rates, which resulted in expense savings. And as you may remember, a salary increase for staff was included in the FY13 budget. The base salary increase of 1% is being delayed until March after reviewing a 6-month financial results, with a similar delay for the 0.5% year-end adjustment in October 2013. It's BARC's stance, however, that the staff increase be ultimately implemented if possible. Now let's look at the FY13 first quarter results, covering the period of September 1 through November 30th. I want to mention that this is early in the fiscal year. 3 months gives us very preliminary information in terms of what our year-end may look like. The mid-year review in February will provide a better picture and will form the basis for any further adjustments that need to be made in the budget. And as you can see, total ALA revenue at $8.7 million is less than budget, and total ALA expenses at $10.4 are also less than budget. Our endowment fund has increased. It currently stands at $32.5 million, which is at $1.6 million more than last year at this time. And the cash investments at $16 million is less than last year, and that's primarily because of the Neil Schuman purchase. So to sum up total ALA revenue, our budget was projected to be at a $1.8 million loss at the 3-month mark, but the loss is less than projected at $1.6 million. A loss at this point in the year is typical in the pattern of our budgeting. Now looking at first quarter results for the general fund. Both revenue and expenses are less than budget at the 3-month mark. You can see that dues are slightly behind budget. Publishing revenue is also behind budget. Now, RDA sales are behind budget, and we are anticipating an increase in sales once the Library of Congress implements the new standard. And this product is going to be extremely attractive to our international market. ALA Editions performance, to some extent, is a matter of timing and budget allocation. The revenue projection was spread over 12 months, but the majority of the activity occurs after the first quarter. And ALA Edition budgeted to release 27 titles in the first quarter and only released 11. But the remaining titles will be published throughout the year, so we will realize that revenue. But publishing is an area of the general fund that BARC is closely monitoring. So to sum up the general fund net revenue, our budget projected at a loss of 1.2 at the 3-month mark is actually a loss of 1.4 million. Now the results for the divisions, The divisions show revenue less than budget, but their expenses are also significantly less than budget. Dues income for the divisions is on target. To sum up the division net revenue, the budget projected a loss of $600,000 at the three-month mark, but the loss is actually less at $400,000, and BARC commends the divisions for their efforts. This concludes the budget portion of my presentation, and now I'd like to update you on some BARC activities. BARC reviewed the dues adjustment proposal developed by the ALA Membership Committee over three meetings. At annual conference in Anaheim, we discussed the two dues adjustment strategies provided to us. One was to tie the future adjustments to an external index, the CPI, and the other was to raise dues by $10 in the first year and tie subsequent years to the CPI. Like other groups at annual, we provided input to the ALA Membership Committee. BARC supported the concept of an external index, but there was mixed support in favor of raising dues by a dollar amount. At our fall meeting, we further discussed the financial model of using the CPI index. We felt it provided a level of sustainable revenue to support ALA programs and services, and we particularly liked the fact that the dues increase amount would be known as the budget for any given year is developed, which would enable the funds to be targeted for strategic programmatic priorities. And it provided for small incremental increases as opposed to larger increases that were made every 5 to 10 years. So BARC recommended and the executive board approved the proposal. Now here at our meeting in Seattle, we reviewed the membership committee's changes to the initial proposal based on input from council, which added a governance oversight component to the proposal. And BARC concurred with the executive board's approval of the changes. Now, another item BARC reviewed was a membership rate extension request. In 2010, BARC recommended that the executive board approve a two-year trial period to offer group United for Library memberships to friends, groups, and boards of trustees. The group membership rate provided United for Libraries a better way to market itself to Felusa's friends groups. This has been a successful marketing tool for UFL. An additional two-year trial period was requested. BARC, the Finance and Audit Committee, and the Executive Board approved the extension at the fall meeting. Lastly, I'd like to remind members present today about an information resource. Last year at this time, I discussed the formation of the ALA Financial Learning Series, which includes webcasts on various finance-related topics that are currently listed on the screen. The purpose of this series was to provide financial and organizational information that would be valuable to divisions and roundtable financial representatives and other member leaders as they carry out their work. BARC used the webcast as part of our orientation for committee members this fall. Reviewing this information in advance allowed us to spend more time at our meeting discussing financial trends and economic conditions and to meet with staff liaisons from the various divisions and roundtables and general fund units. The committee felt it was a much more productive use of time. I encourage you to review the series if you haven't already done so, and if you have suggestions for additional topics, BARC would be pleased to receive them. Our next slide shows where you may obtain these webcasts. I'd like to conclude my report today by thanking members of BARC for their work over the last 6 months. I'd like to recognize the ALA staff members who provide an invaluable support to BARC. ALA is truly fortunate to have an extremely talented finance team. On behalf of BARC members, I'd like to thank Greg Calloway, Keith Brown, Sandy Lee, and Elaine Klemek for their outstanding work and support in preparing information necessary for BARC to carry out its work.
Thank you. And I see that there is at least one question. Microphone number 4.
Thank you. Sean Reinhart, Chapter Counselor for California. Thank you for your report. It was very thorough. I just had a question. You mentioned that management is delaying the proposed 1% adjustment to base salary until March 2013, pending a review of six-month financials, also delaying the October increase. Could you go into a little bit more detail? What was the reason for the delay, and what criteria would you be using to assess whether or not those increases should go forward?
Right. Because we were still looking at potential softness, we didn't, at the time the budget was developed, the softness of publishing and whether we were going to meet our revenue targets. We wanted to make sure that if there were issues like there were last year when publishing and we had problems at annual conference not meeting revenue, that we would have something to fall back on because we didn't have the net asset balance. And so that's why we were just, it's sort of a contingency sitting there in case there's real issues with the budget. Does that answer your question?
And the second part of my question is the criteria by my reading.
Oh, yes.
The treasurer's
it's
report.
Whether, oh, I'm sorry. It's whether we are meeting our revenue targets at the six-month mark. So we will look to see where we're projected to be, what we've come in, and what we know will come in, and if we are on target with our revenue projections in March, that we've met them, then it would go forward.
Thank you. So, I'm sorry, just to follow up, by my read of the Treasurer's report, 1% of payroll is in the neighborhood of $210,000.
It is.
So is that the amount by which, you know, you need to hit the revenue target or come within that amount of it?
No, no, it's whether we are on target with our line items, with publishing. Is publishing on target? Is conference on target? Did we meet our revenue?
Thank you. All right. I would encourage that if there's any way to ensure that those increases go forward, that be done.
We are.
Thank you.
We are.
Microphone number two.
Jim Neal, ALA Treasurer. I want to emphasize both the 1% base increase and the 1% one-time increase are built into the budget. Mm-hmm. So these are not monies that we have to find in order to add to the, but they are in the budget.
Right.
So as we look at the revenue and expense results at the six-month mark, we are going to be in a much stronger position to know when and how we can move forward with those increases. I can say that not only in BARC, but in the executive board, there is a very, very strong opinion that we should move forward with these increases. But I think we felt it was a responsible thing to do to be able to take a six-month look at our overall budget situation.
Microphone number five.
Karen Schneider, Counselor at Large. How much, if any, RDA related revenue is projected in this budget year?
I don't have that total number right here with me. Do you have it, Keith? Greg, do you have that number for them? I don't have that specific number, Karen. Wait.
Okay.
We'll get it. We'll get it, though. It'll take a minute, but we'll get it for you.
All right. That's my question.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Clara.
Okay. Thank you.
I now call your attention to Council Document Number 13 and call upon ALA Treasurer Jim Neal to present his report.
Good afternoon. Clara focused your attention on the current year budget. My responsibility is to take us back and to take a look at the results for fiscal year 12. I'll do that both at the ALA level, but then focus your attention down to the general fund, the divisions, and the roundtables. The other thing I want to focus your attention on in this presentation is the overall asset situation of ALA. What are our assets, the things we have, we own, and our liabilities, the things that we owe? As you know, we are taking a very strong look at the future finances of Midwinter and Annual. And I want to give you some data about what we are experiencing over the last decade in terms of the expenses and the revenues from that important part of our overall budget at ALA. And lastly, as I've often done, is I want to emphasize the efforts being made by the Executive Board and various groups across the association to find new sources of revenue that serve the membership, but also bring new assets into the work of the association. You have the report, 13.1, and my goal is to focus your attention on a few of the elements. First of all, what were the total ALA revenues for fiscal year 12? Well, we are a $50 million
organization. And you can see the trends moving from 2011 to 2012. We had a significant increase in revenue from publishing, largely explained by the acquisition and the sale of Neil Schumann books. Second, with two divisional national conferences in fiscal year 12, you can see the increase in the revenue coming as a result of those events. And third, we did have the increase in our grants and award. So the overall result was a 6.6% increase from 11 and 12 in ALA total revenues. And you can see how this looks over the last decade. We hit a peak in 2008, as most of us did in our organizational and other lives. We had a downturn, but what we've experienced from 11 to 12 is a much, much valued increase in our revenues. What has happened on the expense side? Here again, largely because we live in a pretty much a balanced budget environment, we also have about a $50 million account for our expenses. And you can see how each of the key elements of our organizational expenses have played out. The net is that we had a 4% increase in our overall expenses against a 6.6% increase in our revenues. And once again, you can see how the expenses and the revenues follow a similar pattern, peaking out in 2008, a downturn, and now as we've moved into 2012, an increase within our expenses, which correlates with an increase in our revenue. Very important for us to always have a sense of the assets and liabilities of the organization. And you can see here that as we move from 11 to 12, we saw a net increase in our net assets of 1.2%. Where did this come from? Well, our total ALA assets currently stand at just over $76 million. And you can see where those changes have occurred. We had a decrease in our cash and investments. Recall, we did pull some funds out of our short-term investments in order to cover the cost of purchasing Neil Schumann. We also had some very significant growth in our long-term investments, our endowment fund, which realized a 4% increase from 31 to 32 million within this fiscal year. We'll shortly hear from the senior trustee, and he'll bring us up to date on what we have seen in terms of our investments over the first 6 months of this year. But this total asset situation for ALA is also needs to be understood in terms of our liabilities, what we owe. And here you can see the key elements to define our liabilities. Accounts payable up by 1.1. Our long-term debt increased to 5.2. And you'll recall that this covers our mortgage for our properties in Washington, for the Washington office, our mortgage in Connecticut for the Choice office, and the loan that we took out to finance the purchase of Neil Schumann, thus allowing us to restore funds to our short-term investments. The net result is that moving from 2009 through 2012, we can see the steady progression in the improvement in our net asset balance, which at the end of fiscal year 12 was just north of $30 million. I think this this set of numbers demonstrates, I think, the basic health, financial health of the association in terms of measuring our assets against our liabilities. Within the ALA general budget, we have the general fund that we need to look at. This covers the things that are not part of the divisions and not part of the roundtables. And here you can see what our revenue situation was in 12 as compared to 11, a 4.6% increase in our revenues, with a particular growth in the area of publishing, largely explained by the sale of Neil Schumann materials, and a modest increase in our meetings and conferences revenue. The revenues in the general fund follow a somewhat different pattern. Although we do see the peaking in 2007, we have seen a much more significant increase as we have moved from 11 to 12. This needs to be weighed against our expenses. And you can see in this analysis, our total expenses in the general fund of $28 million, an increase in all the categories, moving from to $28 million. Thus, our expenses are increasing by 8.1%. And the expense pattern pretty much maps well against the revenue pattern looking out over a 10-year period. So where did we end up? Well, we ended up with a loss in fiscal year 12 of $1,372,230. Well, this was largely explained by less than predicted revenue in our conferences, less than predicted revenue in our publishing, and some reduction in our interest income. This was a $935,000 increase over the loss that we experienced in fiscal year 11. Thankfully, we had at our disposal a net asset balance. This is not part of our long-term investment, our endowment fund. This is not part of our short-term investment or our cash funds, but a fund that had been created by the board over the years as a fund that could be used in rainy day situations like we experienced last year and to fund special projects as needed. We chose to draw down the negative budget situation for fiscal year 12, $1.3 million from that net asset balance, leaving $56,000, but as reported by Clara, with a plan and hope that we can restore in a positive way nearly $300,000 to that net revenue balance as we move into and through fiscal year 13. The divisions had a very positive year. You can see that they improved their revenues by over 12% in fiscal year 11 from fiscal year 12. This is largely explained by the two national conferences, where you can see a $1.7 million increase in the revenues. On the expense side, even though there was an increase in revenues, there was an actual decline in expenses in the divisions from 11 to 12, an actual 5% overall decrease. The right-hand column is something new we added this year to the division analysis, where you can see overall, on a percentage basis, where divisions are spending their money. In this case, 38% for payroll, 12% for publications, and so on. I think that's a very interesting analysis. And here we can see the revenue to expense. This is a pretty spectacular result. You can see in 2011, the divisions realized a net revenue of $31,000, and in 2012, just over $1 million for a 3,158% increase. That's the phenomena of two national conferences. So I think it's important to understand how critically valuable those conference programs are to the overall health of the divisions and the overall health of ALA. Roundtables also had a relatively solid year. There was a modest decrease in their net revenue, but in the case of many of the roundtables, they do have net asset balances that they can draw on to support the work of their programs and their activities. I want to focus our attention a little bit, and for a few minutes, on midwinter and annual. We've been working over several years to try to rethink what role do they play in the overall program of the association, and where do they fit in going forward into our budgetary health? As you know, we have put a lot more focus in midwinter on turning it into a professional conversation and less of a business meeting. In the case of annual, we're trying to compact the campus and try to manage more effectively the expenses that we have at our annual conference. At the Council 2, I'll be providing much more detail to you, Council, on some of the details of our expenses as they relate to annual and the efforts being made to manage them. But here you can see over a decade what we've been experiencing in annual conference revenues, again experiencing peaks in the mid part of the decade with some decline over the last 3 to 4 years. Expenses follow a similar pattern, but expenses I think are more difficult to manage. You have a conference, there are certain basic investments of infrastructure and support that you need to provide. The net revenue, I think, is an important, even a more important snapshot, and you can see that our net revenue from the annual conference has declined over the last 2 years, and I'm going to come back to that. Midwinter meeting revenues have actually improved. Last year, we saw more management of expenses and better attendance. Our expenses also came down modestly, and you can see the pattern over the last decade. And although we had a negative result and basically a break even in 2010, negative in 2011, we saw improvement in net revenue results for 2012. I hope that signals where we are going. These are important statistics because, as you know, the overhead rate is applied to the revenue that we receive in annual and midwinter. The blue line, the top line, tells you what the total revenue was from the annual conference. The bottom line tells you, after the application of the overhead rate, what the real net revenue was for the annual conference in each of those years. I should add that that blue line is important because the overhead rate is redeployed to support the programs and offices of the in the work of the association. The blue line is the important line. We always also watch the bottom line, the net revenue. The midwinter meeting also shows a similar pattern. The blue line is before the application of the overhead rate. The 10.4% in 2012 represents the result afterward. The concern that we had in 2011 is that we fell below the line. We actually lost money as a result of the 2011 conference, midwinter meeting. But remember, there was 20% profit that was in, redeployed into the work of the association. Where does this go? So annual and midwinter are fundamentally important because they help support the work of the larger organization that does not have revenues. And here are some of the categories that you can see. Communications, the various member offices and support, the Washington office, the Office of Diversity, the Office of Intellectual Freedom, the Executive Office, and the general administrative cost of running a large organization. The budget from 2011 to 2012 for these basic non-revenue revenue-generating aspects of the organization was flat. And I think that's an important observation of how we're managing our costs on the administrative side of the House. Let me conclude by focusing your attention on some of our efforts to look at new sources of revenue. We're trying to take our publishing resource, particularly the titles that we acquired from Neil Schuman, and looking to make them much more available in e-format. We're looking across all of our backlist titles in terms of an electronic publishing effort. We're having some success in drawing our Neil Schuman authors and our Neil Schuman titles into our very successful publishing webinars and e-courses, and Huron Street Press, our effort to really get into a more general general market for our publishing efforts, has had some successful titles and will expand over the next year. We're also recognizing that as ALA, we have a great brand that is well respected around the world. Since 2008, our international revenues have increased by over 40% to $1.9 million. We're seeing more and more membership coming from international individuals. We're seeing more registration at our conferences. We're seeing more of our publishing projects being acquired by people around the world. We are also, as we develop our online CE capacity, we're seeing the international marketplace as a very important customer base for our online efforts. And the conversations we're having, both in the book exhibits that we've been participating in our outreach to professional library associations around the world, is seeing great interest in participating in our e-learning possibilities. So the global strategy is increasingly important to our resource development. We've done well over the last couple of years in building out not only a greater array of online learning opportunities, but focusing our those who want to use those learning opportunities to find them within the ALA website and participate in them. We are trying to build a much more cogent, much more aggressive, much more systematic approach to online learning, and we're hoping that in the next 6 months we'll be able able to present to you the larger concept of the LA Online University with a shared infrastructure and some shared policies, and hopefully building out a much more enhanced revenue stream from our very, very successful online learning efforts. So that's where we stand as we concluded fiscal year 12 in all the elements of our budget. This is where our rethinking is taking place around our midwinter and annual conferences, and some constant focus and thinking across the association on how we can build an appropriate stream of new revenue. Thank you very much.
Are there questions for Jim? Questions for Jim? Microphone number 4.
John Stevenson, Roundtable Counselor from Godort. In the global strategy, you mentioned that two region-specific pilot programs are in development, and I wonder what regions ALA might target.
Do you want to speak to that? Yeah, okay.
We're currently focusing on two areas. The first is the Middle East, and the second is China. And obviously there are other areas of the world where we have some interest, but there's been an enormous amount of interest on the part of the Chinese government, the Chinese library community, in American libraries, and in building a library system there. So we've had multiple conversations and some very interesting possibilities, I would say. Middle East, again, there's a strong economy, a very strong interest in American institutions of higher education, and a very strong expatriate community with, in many instances, strong ties to the association. So we have some, I think, friends on the ground there who can have been, I think, very supportive of the association reaching out to the Middle East.
Thank you very much.
Again, microphone number 4.
Gail Schlachter, Counselor at Large. I want to thank you, Jim, for a very clear and helpful report. I do, however, have a question.
Yes.
About the table that's on page, the second table that's on page 3. I noticed that just about...
Could you reference the title of that? Because mine are on single sheets.
Sorry, total ALA assets. And I noticed that the reason that we did advance and didn't really stay the same is because there's two new line items that were not previously valued. And I wondered why this change took place, how the valuation was calculated, and why it wasn't done in the past.
This represents two specific items linked to the acquisition of Neil Schumann. As I reported at midwinter, we went through a very, very extensive externally administered valuation of that asset. And as a result of that analysis, and I should say that the full report that I gave to council is on the treasurer's website, and all the details of that valuation are included there, so I point you to those. But two key elements of that assessment were the intangible assets, which were valued at $3.9 million, and then the goodwill. Any type of acquisition of that type requires that type of valuation in order to make the decision whether to go forward with the purchase, and therefore, because of accounting and auditing rules, we need to reflect that in our total assets. That will be reevaluated on an annual basis, and that number will change, and whether we do that assessment internally or whether we bring an external firm in to assist us with that reanalysis, it will be reflected going forward in several years of our total ALA assets. Asset analysis.
Thank you.
Okay.
Microphone number 4.
Jim Reddick, personal member. I don't know if this is the appropriate time for this question, if I should have asked it of the BARC chair. What happens? Is there any scenario planning for if the dues increase isn't approved? We've seen innumerable, well, actually numberable positions lost from those offices and central services that serve all members. We're very thinly staffed in some of those areas, and it may force decisions instead of reducing staff in those areas into eliminating some of those areas. And I just wonder if there's any look at what the implications might be if we don't get that additional membership dues revenue.
Yes, there are several budget analyses that have gone forward, Jim. One assuming approval of the dues increase, and a second assuming that it doesn't happen. Remember that if the dues increase is approved by council, it goes to membership. on the April ballot. If it is approved by membership, it would be implemented after that, and that because of the staggering of membership renewals over a 12-month period on a month-to-month basis, the full financial impact of whatever that increase is, as determined by the CPI analysis, would not have its full impact until fiscal year 15. So we understand that there will be some short-term impact in fiscal year 14, which is involved, which has been factored in, into our budget planning, but the full impact would be realized in fiscal year 15. I should also add that in the fiscal year 13 plan that that Clara reported on, we've built in probably just over $1 million worth of contingency. Recognizing that we're not quite sure where the overall revenue situation is going to develop, how it's going to develop over the next fiscal year, that is the current fiscal year, and so we've tried to build some contingencies in the budget which would enable us to implement reduced revenue without having to cut additional positions. So we're trying to get through fiscal year 14. If the dues increase is realized, it would have its full impact in 15, but we have an alternative budget strategy to deal with it if necessary. We are deeply concerned as the executive board in the number of positions that we have lost, and we need to be very cautious going forward, which is why we're trying to control expenses, for example, in our annual conference planning, and try to make sure that we don't overexpend so that we can protect our most vital resource, the expertise and important service element of the staff that we employ.
Microphone number four.
Popular microphone tonight, number four. Sean Reinhart, chapter counselor for California. Thank you for your report, Mr. Treasurer. I'm referring to page two in the handout, which is slide three or four in the slideshow, titled Total ALA Expenses, $50 million and some change. I have a question about the operating line item there. One is that it looks like there's a typo or something in the change that's indicated. It shows $7.5 million operating expenses in 2012, $6.3 million in 2011 with a change of $1.522 million. I did the math, and those figures actually result in a $1.18 million difference.
I'm looking at different numbers, so I'm going to ask for some help here. My chart, which may not be the same as your chart, is $7.8 million as the operating in 2012. Uh-huh. Do you show that?
No, it says 7.554582.
Keith, can you bring that
up? It says total ALA expenses, $50,053,297.
Okay, that is a typo.
Okay.
Take out your pens. No, it's 7896435.
That's fine. And the reason why I was looking at that line so closely,
you read it too closely. Oh, I have to watch out for you.
Was the the change is significant.
Yes.
And so I was wondering if you could go into a bit more detail to explain why the significant increase in operating expenses.
Do you have an idea?
Sure.
Okay, great.
Neil Schumann. So what you have is you have an additional $1.3 million in revenue coming in. You have attendant operating expenses, and we had one-time costs associated with the purchase. So that this particular budget, as you can see on the graphs, both expenses and revenues go up by the amount of both revenue expenses associated with Neil Schumann.
There was about $800,000 in cost associated with the Neil Schumann purchase. I outlined those in my report last at midwinter. Those involved some payments that we had to make on the rent for the space in New York, the lease that was Neil Schumann had. We had to pay for the move of the product, the books, from New York to Chicago. We also had to pay certain lawyer fees and accounting fees. We had to pay for the valuation fees. So there were some purchase costs, one-time purchase costs associated with Neil Schumann, much of which was outlined at our midwinter presentation, and those are captured here in the operating expenses.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much.
At the 1985 midwinter meeting, Council voted that the endowment trustees be invited to report to the Council at each midwinter meeting and annual conference. I now refer you to ALA Council document number 16 and call upon John Vitale, Chair of the Endowment Trustees, to present the report. John?
Thank you, Maureen. Good afternoon. Before I give the endowment trustees report, including for your information several items that the trustees have put before the Finance and Audit Committee for its consideration, I want to express my thanks to my colleagues among the trustees, Bob Walton, Kate Nevins, Jim Neal, and Rod Hershberger. I also want to thank very much the assistants, the very fine assistants of the ALA staff, Keith Michael Felds, Greg Calloway, and Keith Brown, and to Merrill Lynch for their dedication and their fiduciary attentiveness to these particular assets of the ALA. Because of their hard work and some luck, the endowment appreciated by about 11% for the entire year, or $2.3 million, against a target or a benchmark of about 12%. The market value at the conclusion of the calendar year 2012 is at $33 million. We're very happy that this happened despite a highly volatile and sometimes downright hostile environment as far as investing is concerned. Whether it's the euro debt crisis, our own U.S. economy, and the struggles we saw there to the presidential election and Hurricane Sandy, these are some of the larger issues, but there were all sorts of issues that created an ebb and flow within the investment world that made it very difficult to keep an even keel, let alone improve the bottom line. What worked for us was some very careful management of the endowment's asset allocation, which pretty much serves as a lever for us to turn on and turn off and to adjust how the assets are in fact allocated, whether it's among equity and real assets, fixed income, and more recently over the last few years, alternatives. So we have done some shifting. It's always been defensively, but what that's allowed us to do in one particular case, to shift from real assets to fixed income, actually allowed us to compensate for some of the other losses in some other areas. There were, despite these improvements, some disappointments. Almost 50% of the investment managers underperformed relative to their benchmark. That was not a catastrophic issue. Some of the underperforming was very nominal, but it still happened. And as we always do, as often as we can, we look very closely at these particular investment managers, and we talk to them, and we spend a lot of time understanding how they do their work and how they do their thinking so that we can make decisions along with Merrill Lynch as to whether or not they need to stay on board. One group that we will particularly look at is NFJ Alliance. They didn't do very well this year, and they've been having some downward trending over the past couple of years. In particular, they performed 3.4% against a goal of 18, which is not good in any industry. So we'll be taking a very good look at them. Going forward, the trustees will continue keeping a very close watch on performance, and we will adjust our work, and we will adjust the assets and the allocation of those assets accordingly. In addition to this report, I also want to mention to you that we have recommended to the Finance and Audit Committee that there be a payout increase from its current 4% to 5%. I know that sometimes sounds in a down market that it's a little counterintuitive, but I can tell you that it is something of a best practice, particularly in environments like this. In my own library, I'm the chief financial officer at the Brooklyn Public Library. And in my own library, our board investment committee did the same thing. We went from 4% to 5%, largely because we needed to sustain the draw to keep the operating budget stable. And that's the whole point of the draw, is to support operations. As the financial world gets better, and as we see the endowment getting better, even better than it is at the moment, we can always adjust that back down to 4%. And so our recommendation is to do it for two fiscal years, fiscal years 13 and 14. That'll take the annual draw from about $1.3 million to about $1.6 million. So that's a $300,000 infusion into the budget, which, you know, given all the information you've seen from Jim, I think is very timely. We have also made a suggested recommendation to change the benchmark language in the investment policy. That, again, is more of a housekeeping change, and it allows us to true up the policy to the practice that we now have as a result of some alternative investments. And we've actually created a target which allows us to better match how those investments are doing against the performance goals. So that concludes my report, and thank you.
Are there questions for John? Microphone number two.
Larry Romans, Councillor at Large. Once again, I see that Ariel Capital exceeded its benchmark. And I see grins up there because I bring this up on a regular basis. I want to know why more money isn't put into socially responsible investments if the return is as good as those who are that are not socially responsible.
Actually, it's a very timely question, because when we get together in February, as we will be in New York City, the endowment trustees will be meeting. We actually, as a result of that performance, tend to take another very hard look at that particular performance number and whether or not we can build upon that going forward. So we are recognizing the success of that particular line, and we're going to see what we can do.
And I hope it's not just going from 1.9% to 2%.
Well, I can't tell you what the percentage allocation is going to be. That'll require more analysis, sure, by Merrill Lynch, but we intend to look at it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
I now call your attention to ALA Council Document Number 26 and call upon Nancy Davenport, Chair of the Nominating Committee for the 2013 ALA election, to present the committee's report.
Good afternoon. Before I give my report, I would like to acknowledge the members of the committee and thank Maureen for appointing all of us to this committee. My colleagues were Mario Annabel Asensio, Trevor A. Dawes, Jamie Corris Hammond, Ling Wei Jing, Terry G. Kirk, Cynthia K. Ritchie, David Schuster, and James F. Williams II. I would also like to acknowledge and to thank Joanne Kemp, who served as the committee's staff liaison. At that point, you have my report in front of you. There are copies that were distributed, and I want to make only a few comments on it, and probably what might be the most controversial piece of this report. There may be two controversial pieces, one being the bottom of page one, which is the responses that the committee received as we were recruiting candidates for council. And you'll see that council has a mixed opinion about this body that is out in the working world as to the value of council and the value of having one's staff member or one's colleague serve on council. By contrast, having one's colleague or oneself elected to a division or a committee office is perceived to have great value to the individual's self-development, and reflected prestige back to the home organization. That same sentiment is not particularly shared vis-a-vis council. I met this morning with the new committee, the new nominating committee, and they perceive that part of their job that they will be coming to you for will be to be able to talk more effectively about council and its value and its benefits as they begin to recruit members to serve on the next council election. The second piece of my report, the part that is labeled opinion not necessarily shared by the committee, it was in fact shared by the committee, but after the fact. Because as the committee chair, I took on this task to, in fact, criticize a predecessor committee for having selected so many members to serve as ballot candidates, exceeding your requirement by 40 additional people. I thought that I should first express that as my personal opinion, but after the fact, my committee did call me and say that many of them concurred in that opinion. I did that not because it was difficult for our committee to find the requisite number of people, but I did it because I value ALA as an organization of colleagues and peers who share each other's experience, who nurture each other, and we benefit from our relationships in growth with each other. But when we invite 40 additional colleagues who we know will not be elected to stand for election, I don't think that does anything to affect our relationship with each other or our ability to attract that talent to serve us in the future. With that, we did supply to you the requisite number of council members, and we have also, I will be presenting to you at the end of my report, presenting to you officially the candidates to serve as that we are putting forth for election to the office of president-elect and as treasurer. And I am ready for any of your questions.
Are there questions on this portion of Nancy's report? Microphone number two.
Larry Romans, counselor at large. Given that you talk about two paths and that one path is intended to create a direct way to give those who have never served on council a chance to be elected, I then note that on your list of nominated candidates, there in fact are people who have already served on council, including one who has served on the executive board. He's someone that I certainly would vote for, but I'm surprised to see
the contradiction in terms.
Yes. Can you comment on how that happened?
I can comment on how it happened. It was appropriate because this person has been off of council to be able to put one back onto council, and this individual sought election this path rather than the ballot path. This would actually be my preferred method, where the nominating committee. Where the nominating committee serves, in fact, as the vetting body for council in the same way that we are asked to serve as the vetting body for individuals who want to stand for election as president-elect and as treasurer. It is, in fact, the two paths that allow any sitting councilor or anyone else, but it's most often done by sitting councilors whose terms are about to expire, to then seek to run by petition, which, as a member of council, having been a member of council, you sit here and you watch them being passed back and forth as everyone signs, or they're now going up on Facebook, which takes minutes to get them signed. It's the fact that we the committee, are required to bring forth a specific number of individuals to stand for election. That number is equal to the number of seats being vacated plus half. So in addition to that number plus half, there is some other unknown number of members of ALA who will choose to run for election, though they did not come through the committee. It makes it even more difficult for an unknown, new, first-time on the ballot member to be able to gain some traction. We found that people had been invited by previous committees to stand for election once, to stand for election twice, lost both times, and we went to them the third time because these are people that have a lot to give in this body, and they said, why? I've been asked to do it twice, I've run campaigns twice, I've lost twice. I'm trying to help us understand that as an organization, I think we want to have a rich, diverse council, but we don't need to set ourselves up to have so many people be defeated and thereby be dispirited about coming back and serving the body.
Microphone number five.
Madam Wayne Hilliard, Counselor at Large. I'm speaking. I got an email from former Counselor Michael Golrick, who wanted me to relay his concern, and I echoed his concern as well. I'm afraid that if the nominating committee is the only path to do this, that the nominating committee is going to be setting itself up for lots of people doing lots of lobbying of the nominating committee in order to get on the ballot. That is one concern. Another concern is this is indeed a member-driven organization, and I do like the opportunity for any member to fill out a petition to be able to run for office. We still have that provision for write-in candidates for president and, I assume, for treasurer, even though there's not always that response. So, but if we can start cooking on this, maybe we can actually come up with a dish that's palatable to all.
Microphone number two.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. Looking at the historical record, people who are on council who get their petition signed very easily sometimes do not get reelected. The turnover, as has been reported on several occasions by Keith Michael Fields, is ongoing. So the turnover is possible. And also, I just like to mention my own personal history. I mean, I was on that list asked to run twice. I didn't make it. I was not asked a third time. I went out and I did my own petition at New York Library Association conference and got the requisite signatures and therefore got on the ballot, and that time I was elected. So you have to remember, it isn't just the people here that are sending things around. There are people within the association who, God bless their hearts, genuinely want to serve and have an interest, and for whatever reason may have fallen off the charts. And it is a way for us to continually refresh this council. Now, I'm now a three-term councillor, and I will be retiring at the end of annual, having done my bit. Not many people serve either three terms or longer, so I would really regret trying to narrow the avenue by which people can have a chance to run, because just getting those new faces through however many ways really is our lifeblood.
Microphone number seven.
Aaron Dobbs, Councillor at Large, three times on the ballot, and only one because someone formally resigned and someone else accepted the PLA councillor position and someone else declined. So as number 36 out of 33, I hear what you're saying, but I also see now that we have an online petition form. I see now that we have, I think it was over a dozen at that point, half of which were councillors, half of which were not, and many of whom are now very engaged in saying, oh, I can just do an online form and get nominated for council and run for it. Cool, I'm doing it. And I go through and I look for the folks that aren't counselors, and I go through and I approve them, whether they have 65, 107, or 13, you know, saying I support this person running for council. So the two paths are very valuable, and I don't think we want to see one of them go away or be more difficult. Thank you.
I just want to clarify for you all that we're not saying that the path of submitting the getting the signatures on a petition should not be a valid path, but more that the preferred path should be a rich and robust slate coming from the nominating committee that consists of members who may be, whose terms may be expiring, as well as any other member of the association, so that that there would actually be real vetting taking place within the committee to put forward a robust group to you. We try to put forward a robust group, having no idea of the numbers of petitions that will come forward, but knowing that it's likely to be a fairly significant number.
I note that there are three more comments, and I would ask each of the three of you to keep it brief because of the time. And I believe it's microphone number six. Oh, is it four? Thank you.
Sean Reinhart, California. On this topic, it's something that I've been thinking about. If you're having difficulty getting folks to accept the nomination to council, at the risk of saying something that's unpopular, I don't want to say that I look around this room, you know, there's so many folks who want to serve, and that's a wonderful thing, and there are many ways to serve the association, and that is something to be valued. But it could very well be that this body is too large, and that when you look at a ballot that has 50 names on it, I would say for the average member, you don't know who they are. So if we are having a discussion about the effectiveness of this body and the way people perceive it and how it works, I think we may want to look at the size, because in my opinion, I believe it's too big.
Thank you. Microphone number six now.
John Sandstrom, member at large. I first joined this body as a roundtable counselor. And there are other paths that are available, and we need to not lose sight of that. After I stepped down the first time, I ran as petition twice and lost both. And then I ran as through the nominations committee and won. So it really varies quite a bit. And I just wanted to remind that there are those multiple paths through the states, through the roundtables, and through the divisions. Thank you.
And again, let me ask for brief comments. We have more of this report to come. Microphone number two.
Mary Bidlow, counselor at large. Did you say more of this discussion is going to come forth?
No, Nancy has more of her report to deliver.
Oh,
and okay. We're getting close to 4:30.
Okay. This is a very touchy subject. And I hate to say it, you have to have the determination and you have to have a survival instinct, okay? When I first came on into ALA, it was a closed door. Such a committee, a nominating committee, presented the names, and people were overlooked, okay? Some people felt that they should be put first, and at that time, a petition candidate was looked upon in distaste. People wanted to be elected or names brought forth through the nominating committee. And to this day, some people do feel that way. Now, I hate to throw this zinger here. I've been running for 30 years as a petition candidate, simply because I never was selected by the nominating committee. They have their reasons, and I had mine. I was determined I was going to serve on ALA's council. And so that's why I say if you have the stamina, you have the will, you will run until you are elected.
Thank you. Microphone number seven.
I'm Courtney Fuson. I'm the TLA, Tennessee Library Chapter Counselor. I was just going to suggest that it might be possible to, instead of having 25 signatures, increase the number required, since social media does make it so much easier to get signatures. And also, instead of automatically being placed on the ballot, maybe those names instead go forth in front of the nominating committee so that there are still two paths, but they then merge into the one in front of the nominating committee.
That is something that all of you will consider if you want to make any changes to this. All I am bringing to you are the observations of what we encountered during the course of being your nominating committee for this past election.
Thank you.
This upcoming election.
Thank you. Please continue with your report.
Thank you. I am about to present the candidates to you. If you are in the room, as I call your name, would you please stand, and would you hold your applause until I call all the names? Thank you. The presidential candidates slated by the committee for the 2013 ALA election are Barbara F. Imroth, Professor, University of Texas at Austin; Courtney L. Young, Head Librarian, Penn State University, McKeesport, Pennsylvania; The treasurer candidates are Clara N. Bohr, director of the West Bloomfield Township Public Library in West Bloomfield, Michigan, and Mario M. Gonzalez, library director, Passaic, New Jersey Public Library. I extend my thanks to all of you and offer our congratulations and best wishes.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Nancy. ALA Bylaw Article 3, Section 3B provides that the ALA Nominating Committee shall also include on the official ballot other nominations filed with the Executive Director by petition of any 25 members of the association at least 4 months before the annual conference, provided written consent of these nominees shall have been filed with the Executive Director of the association. Petitions must be filed by February 4th, 2013. Keith Michael Fields will report on any petitions received for the office of president-elect.
Thank you.
To date, petitions with consent have been filed for the office of ALA counselor-at-large by Gerardo A. Calmenar, associate librarian at the University of California Santa Barbara Davidson Library, Karen E. Downing, foundation and grants librarian at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Loida Garcia Fabo, Principal Information New Wave, Brooklyn, New York. Richard L. Huffin, Library Director at the U.S. Geological Survey in Reston, Virginia. Patricia M. Hogan, Administrative Librarian at the Poplar Creek Library in Steamwood, Illinois. Florante Peter Ibanez, Manager of Library Computer Services at the Loyola Law School Raines Library in Los Angeles, California. Charles E. Kratz, Jr., Dean of Libraries at the University of Scranton, Harry and Jeanette Weinberg Memorial Library in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Dennis J. LaLoupe, School Librarian at the Avon Intermediate Schools in Avon, Indiana. Bernard A. Margolis, State Librarian at the New York State Library Cultural Education Center in Albany, New York. Patricia A. McLeod, Library Director at the David and Joyce Milne Public Library in Williamstown, Massachusetts. Kevin Reynolds, Assistant University Librarian for Learning and Access Services, the University of the South in Sewanee, Tennessee. Susan Roman, Dean, Dominican University, River Forest, Illinois. Larry Romans, Head, Government Information and Media Services, Vanderbilt University Library, Nashville, Tennessee. Mina Danielle Shore, Senior Manager, Branch Services, Omaha, Nebraska Public Library. J. Linda Williams, Coordinator, Library Media Services, Anne Arundel County Public Schools in Pasadena, Maryland. And Sue Cam, retired from my job, not the profession, she notes, of Los Angeles, California.
Thank you, Keith. I take it there were no others for president-elect or treasurer?
There were not.
Thank you. I now call upon you for announcements.
Great. And I have one single announcement, and that is your document portfolios, counselors, are available at the council documents pickup station. Please use them to collect and retain all council documents distributed throughout the course of the midwinter meeting. And if you're not here at your seat, you should make sure that they're there. Thank you.
Thank you. And let me just go back for a moment and remind everyone that electronic balloting will begin on March 19th. Polls will close on April 26th, and we'll know the results of the election on May 3rd. It is now just a little bit before 4:30. The ALA Executive Board membership information session stands adjourned. The ALA Presidential and Treasurer Candidates Forum will begin shortly. Thank you.